Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Jonathan Von Tobel of Money Moves will join us to go over the conference championship games. We have a Super Bowl. We will discuss that with him. Maybe we'll see if he has any thoughts, NBA, other things, because it's time to turn the page a little bit on football as we go a couple of weeks now without a game. But what a day it was, and it felt like the games took forever to get here. Part of it was, they started a little after 3 o'clock. I think 3:03 was the kickoff on the East Coast. And part of it, I mean, pretty much wherever you were in the country, most places at least, you're snowed in. So whatever your Sunday routine is, whether it's you're going to the store or you're going to the gym or you're doing something to break up the day before the football started, there was no breaking up the day. There was just you wake up whatever time, 7, 8 o'clock, and then you just sit there and stare at the clock waiting for 3 o'clock to come. And it took a long time to get here. But it was worth it. Fun games. I'll go in backwards order here. And an anticlimactic finish. I wouldn't call that a classic. That was a really good game that was looking like a classic between the Rams and the Seahawks. The Seahawks win 31-27. And it's funny. We sit here and we talk about these spreads all week and these lines and all this. And at one point, on Monday last week, Seahawks were favored by 3 over the Rams. And they win by 4. Patriots were favored by 3.5 at the close over the Broncos. They win by 3. So these lines were pretty tight. And not that the final result justifies anything. It's a one-game sample. But these games, right in the ballpark, and look at it this way, if you teased any of the four teams, you won. So these games were right around the number. But we'll start with the later one. Like I said, a little anticlimactic. It's amazing at 31-27. And I would have gone for two if I was McVay. I really thought the Rams should have gone for two. Last minute or so of the third quarter, get that thing to 3. It changes the game. I'd just much rather be down 3. If you're down 5, I understand. If Seattle kicks a field goal, now it's 8. Now you get the 2. But you got a good offense. You're moving the ball. That's part of it, too. The extra point's not automatic, even though you did make it. I would have liked to make it a 3-point game. But at 31-27 after the third quarter, nobody scores the rest of the game. I mean, that is just very worse. That is just very very unusual here. I'm reading text messages and trying to talk at the same time. Very unusual here that you get a high-scoring game like that, and fourth quarter is usually the high-scoring quarter. Sometimes you get it the inverse, where nothing happens in the first quarter, and then you have a scoring explosion. I was talking about it the other night with Humans when I was hosting on VSiN. The Carolina-New England Super Bowl, where it's 0-0, not only through the first, but with a couple minutes left in the half, and then the scoring just exploded late in that half, and in the fourth quarter, you end up with this high-scoring game. So you get that sometimes, but it's very rare that you get shootout, back and forth, big plays, touchdowns, 31-27, third quarter, and nobody scores the rest of the game, and that's what it was. And it was just an anticlimactic. I keep using that word, but that's the word, as Seattle just runs out the clock three, four yards at a time. Give them credit. They were aggressive. They didn't just, run 3 times and punt. And they were aggressive going back to the fact, we'll change coaches with Carroll. We'll bring in Darnold. We're not going to just sit here when, Geno Smith and Carroll and be happy to go 9-7. They went for it. And here they are in the Super Bowl and favored in the Super Bowl. So, I think the issues here with McVay, though, like I said, would have gone for 2. Had no problem. I mean, as somebody at the Rams plus the points, I wish he kicked the field goal down 4 in that last sequence. And they never really saw the ball again. And by the time they saw it, there was really, it was going to take a Hail Mary type effort just to get a Hail Mary. When you start with the ball on your own 7-8 yard line, no timeouts, 20 seconds, there's not much you can do. I would have been fun just from a fan standpoint to see Nacua get out of bounds and have one shot at a Hail Mary. And then who knows, maybe somebody come up with it. And I thought for a second he might have gotten out of bounds, but the game ends that way. The one thing I think McVay deserves some grief for here, when Kupp catches the ball on the final drive for Seattle and he's tackled, you got to throw the challenge flag. You can use that challenge as a free roll, because what's the worst that happens? All right, you lose the challenge, you lose the timeout. Just throw the challenge. It's worth it. Now, maybe, and I'm doing this right after, I haven't had a chance to hear the press game, maybe McVay clarified it. Maybe they told him, and the league's not clear with this, replay assist, the replay review, where they do it from above. Maybe they told him, we reviewed it, it stands, you're not going to win the challenge, save your challenge, it's been confirmed. I mean, based on the Drake May spot, which I'll get to in a minute, earlier in the day, who knows with these spots, because I thought May was well short. Maybe they would have given it to Kupp anyway, but right away, you don't go for the timeout. You just throw the challenge flag, and it's a free roll. I don't know. Seattle might have had the guts to go for it, 4th and inches, but that would have been really, really ballsy to go for it if Seattle was stopped. And I think, boy, I think it's at least 50-50 they would have overturned it. But give credit to Seattle. They survived. That would have been an all-time Bill Buckner-esque moment for Tariq Woolen to get flagged there at a 12-point game, or it was an 11-point game. You're about to get the ball back. You get the penalty. You give up the touchdown. I mean, that is an all-time blunder if the Rams stick it in and win the game. But it's not to be. He's off the hook. Always forgiven, always forgotten. And Seattle advances. And I think you go back to the sequence that really lost the Rams game, lost the Rams this game. And, boy, it looked early on, at least for me, that Seattle might run away with it. Yeah, they get a stop. They get a pretty easy touchdown. They held them to a field goal. They're driving for another touchdown. I think there was a bad snap that set them back that made it 10-3 instead of what would have been 14-3. And then the Rams kind of settled in. The Rams, after all that, have the ball. They have the lead. And I can't kill them for being aggressive. I don't want to just play the results. But it is dicey when you don't burn any clock. And they ran it on first down. But when you don't burn any clock, you not only give Seattle the ball back, but you give them time to score a touchdown. They do. That's a bad sequence. At least going to the half with the lead. They didn't. And then you get a stop right away, and you fumble the punt. You muff the punt, and you give him another free touchdown. You could survive one of those. You can't survive both those. So the sequence going into the half and coming out of the half is ultimately what undid the Rams. Again, I had a problem with the two-point conversion, not going for that, and I had a problem with McVay not going for the challenge flag and a play he might have won there with the cup play that pretty much sealed it. But give credit to Darnold, and boy, he's a Viking fan. Wonder what J.J. McCarthy's thinking. Two people I was thinking about watching these games today. I wonder what J.J. McCarthy is thinking and the Vikings thinking, man. We let this guy go. He won all these big games for us. And I sat here on this podcast, said it all the time. Whatever they do, it's going to be the wrong decision. I can't kill him. He was awful in the last two games. You're going to have to pay him a lot. You're going to have to hurt the rest of the team. I can't second guess it. But, I mean, you would certainly like a mulligan, certainly like a do-over, because that's a really good team the Vikings have. Darnold's in the Super Bowl. The Vikings missed the playoffs and the quarterback. He played a little better at the end of the year, but stunk most of the year and was not healthy most of the year. As Darnold is a favorite now to win the Super Bowl. Just a cursed franchise. That is just very on brand for the Minnesota Vikings. But Darnold in Seattle advance, and they will take on the Patriots. I said last week, even though I was rooting for the Bills and everyone was complaining the Bills got a bad whistle, I don't want to hear it. The calls weren't that bad. The Cooks play was not a bad call. He didn't have the ball long enough. I don't want to hear about the pass interferences. One of them was legitimate. The other one was shaky, but there was roughing the passer. I don't want to hear about the refs. I don't like talking about the refs anyway. Oof, Broncos got a tough whistle today. Broncos got a really tough whistle. I've seen the Stidham play, the fumble, and that's a terrible play by Stidham. Terrible play. Just protect the ball. Your defense is dominating. Don't pull a C.J. Stroud. I mean, don't give the game away. He gave the game away. I've seen it like probably a dozen times. Sometimes I think it's a fumble because he's at the 15 and the ball lands on the 13, so the ball went backwards somehow. I wonder if they ruled it was stripped and then he threw it backwards. We didn't really get a clear explanation as to why it was ruled a fumble, and they called it a pass on the field, and you look at some of the replays, he's throwing it forward. I don't know if it got tipped backwards or if it got stripped and they got ruled he didn't have possession when his hands are moving forward with the ball, that it was already lost control of it, and that's how it got knocked backwards for a fumble. I thought that was a shaky call, but I thought the one that was egregious, and really, this was all 10 Patriot points were off questionable calls. May did not get that first down on the sneak. I don't want to hear it. He was short. The overhead angle showed he was short, and people say, oh, you're just rooting for Denver. You had Denver plus the points. Denver covered. I don't care. Denver still covered, so it doesn't matter. And I'm still annoyed, but I'm still annoyed by him. Like, what are we watching? What are we betting on? He did not get that first down, but the Patriots advance. May throws for 80-something yards, and then the Super Bowl, incredible. And on one hand, it was awesome to watch. It was just awesome to watch a football game in that weather with those conditions. On the other hand, it was kind of absurd. The fact that you had to sit him out there, nobody can move, nobody can do anything. You're like, wow, this is for a trip to the Super Bowl. This is what we're doing. But, I mean, you can kind of hold two thoughts in your head at the same time. We appreciate it and enjoy it. On the other hand, it was a little bit absurd. But there's nothing better than snow football in the playoffs. That was a lot of fun to deal with the elements. I thought when the punt for New England after they got pinned went out of bounds and gave Denver a short field, I thought maybe they could muster 30, 40 yards and get in the end zone or at least get a short field goal and then make it a 50-50 game, a tie game. And boy, if they didn't give May that call on the fourth down, or if Lutz had made the field goal and it was tipped, and if it wasn't tipped, Romo was telling you, hey, that kick is going in if it's not tipped. If that game goes to overtime, we might still be playing. I'm recording this here, 11 o'clock on the East Coast. I don't know who was scoring in that game because New England couldn't do much on offense. Maybe May would have been a play with his legs eventually. That was really the difference. He made a couple plays with his legs. Stidham didn't really run much. Even though Stidham did look pretty good early, they would have played for a very long time because nobody could do anything. That's what I was rooting for. I was rooting for overtime in the snow. That would have been just a lot of fun. But New England gets the win in the Super Bowl. Stephon Diggs, again, as a Viking fan, Stephon Diggs, all these ex-Vikings in the Super Bowl, it is kind of bittersweet to see some of these guys get it. He was chirpy after the game. People gave up on me. They thought I was washed. Calm down. I love Diggs, but calm down. He had 17 receiving yards. Let's relax a little bit. A lot is going to be made of the Peyton decision, 4th and 1, to go for it. I will say this. If you knew the weather that was coming, you have to kick. I don't think he knew the weather. And at the time, I had no problem with it. I said I would probably go for it, but I would not be outraged if he kicked it because you do have a backup quarterback, and he was decent early, but he stunk the rest of the game. Everyone gave him the benefit of the doubt. Oh, he'll play okay, including me. He stunk for most of the game. The turnover was terrible. Didn't get rid of the ball. There was a couple plays where they could have hung on to the ball, but he was mostly bad in the game despite being pretty good early on. If you're going to go for it, just if it's short enough where you can sneak it, go for it. The sneak is almost unstoppable. Just get a little surge, extend the ball, and before you know it, you got a first down. It was a little long for that. I wouldn't have had a problem if he kicked the field goal to go up 10-0. I think it is a little bit of people playing the results. You didn't go for it, and then you lost by a field goal. You should have kicked. Now, some people say, hey, take the points, and that's just their approach. I think with a backup quarterback, even though I've gone for it in the moment, can't argue. If you told me, you know what, you should kick the field goal, go for get the 2-score lead. I couldn't argue with you, but here's the thing. Peyton's going for the kill there. If he goes up 14-0 with the way his defense is playing, with the way May and New England was just completely overmatched against that Denver defense, and they were overmatched, you're up 14-0. The game is pretty much over. You're not going to blow that game, and you could just run the ball, be conservative, run it 3 times and punt. You're going to be in good shape, and you could make the case, if he goes up 10-0, he can do the same thing. But I get going for the kill. You could have gone either way. People crushing him for not kicking it, I think that's a little bit playing the results. I would have probably gone for it. I probably would have snuck it, but give Romo credit. Romo said, I don't like this. Just go up 2 scores. You got a backup quarterback. You got a good defense. You're home. Just go up 2 scores. It's not a bad, wouldn't have been a bad decision. It's not a bad opinion to have. But it is a little bit of playing the results as, we talk about these games all week. I listen to all these shows, guests on other shows, and you just talk about all these angles. I checked the weather. I didn't hear anyone bring up the weather. It is going to be cold. Obviously, check the weather with what was going on the East Coast, and not just the East Coast, all over the country. Nobody said it was going to snow and snow like that. It was like, it's going to be cold, a little wind, but the weather's not going to be really a factor. The weather was a major, major factor, and that was one thing that really caught everyone by surprise. And again, if Peyton had known that kind of snow was coming, get a 10-0 lead and then just kind of play keep away the rest of the way. The two guys I was thinking about, too, and I mentioned this, I think, in the beginning. I wonder what Gerard Mayo, the former Patriot coach who was one and done with them last year, I wonder what he's thinking. I wonder what J.J. McCarthy's thinking. Thinking, they got rid of this guy to play me, and I stunk and couldn't stay on the field. I wonder what those two guys are thinking. Those two guys had a bad day. But we do have a Super Bowl. We have a rematch of the 2014 season. You are going to see that Malcolm Butler interception about 1,000 different times over the next couple weeks with the rematch here of that one 11 years ago where the Patriots win a classic. And it's funny. Denver up 7-0 when they made that decision to go for it in the red zone, middle of the second quarter. Imagine thinking then, all right, Denver's not going to score the rest of the game. I mean, you would have never thought that. You really wouldn't have because they were moving the ball pretty well. They had just scored. They had a good drive before that. They had some decent drives and thinking, all right, this is it. At 7-0, even though you're in the red zone now with a 4th and 1, you're not going to score here and you're not going to score the rest of the game. That would have been hard to believe, but the Super Bowl line is up. The look-ahead line was a little short. Part of it is probably because the Patriots weren't ultra-impressive and didn't cover on Sunday, didn't do much on offense once again. And this has been just a run where May look, would love to have him on my team. Young quarterback is going to either win the MVP or the runner-up. That's a guy anyone would love to have. He has done nothing in these playoffs. I know, you know he's played some good defense, all that. He has done absolutely nothing. He's made some plays with his legs. He's not screwed it up to the point where he's, you know, lost the game, even though he's fumbled a bunch of times. But he has done nothing. I mean, 86 yards passing, 10 points, and, you know, 7 off a gift and turnover. And then the 3 points, you know, later in the game, and you could really make the case he got stopped on that fourth down. But Patriots and Seahawks, Seahawks laying 4.5, total 46.5. Darnold plus 130 to win MVP, May plus 235 MVP, Smith and Jigba plus 550, Walker 6-1. I mean, how can you have four guys 6-1 or shorter? That feels like a little egregious on the book's part in terms of the whole. But we will have plenty of shows to discuss the football, the Super Bowl. Obviously not going to ignore it, but I'm not going to do, I mean, we got six shows between now and the Super Bowl. I'm not going to do all six podcasts on the same game. It just gets monotonous. So start to do a little college basketball, a little NBA, some Super Bowl, maybe some baseball. Just mix it up here. It's that time of the year where you just kind of mix your pitches until, you know, March Madness. Then the shows kind of take care of themselves. March Madness into baseball, NBA playoffs before you know it, it's summer, but this is the time of the year where you just kind of mix it up and do a little bit. Anyway, NFL draft will be something you do in the future, but not going to do all Super Bowl here the next couple of weeks. So Seahawks and the Patriots, what would that have exactly been? If you said before the season, back whenever, May, June, sometime in the summer, you know, I got a feeling it's going to be Seahawks-Patriots in the Super Bowl. I mean, the Seahawks will win total. I heard people, a lot of people saying, you know, Seahawks probably finishing last, with Arizona might be decent, which I thought. Rams good, 49ers good, Seahawks could be a last place team. And then the Patriots, they were on the rise, and they had an easy schedule, but that was a team they won, three or four games last year and had a top pick. And both teams, I think, were in that. I got one tweet that said it was 1,500-1 for that to be the exact. And that is one hell of a ticket, 1,500-1 for it to be a Seahawks versus Patriots Super Bowl. Congrats if you had that. I had somebody who tweeted me that they got a ridiculous number in week 4. And remember, the Patriots start the season. Somebody tweeted me too. It was 27-1 on November 4th. Neither team started the season great. Seahawks were 0-1. They lost at home to the 49ers. Patriots were 0-1. So both teams not only lost week one, both teams lost at home week one. Seahawks lost to the 49ers, and the Patriots lost to the Raiders of all teams, which is just bizarre when you think about it. And I'm trying to find here. Selective Capper on Twitter, 220-1. Yeah, $4.75 to win a grand. A little over a grand. That was, he said, in week 3 or week 4. Pretty good ticket. Pretty good ticket to have. So we'll see what JVT thinks. We'll get his thoughts on the title games, the Super Bowl, see what else is on his mind. That is next. This Should Have Been More podcast. All right, we're back. Should Have Been More podcast. You can catch a Money Moves pod to the future. And he joins us again, Jonathan Von Tobel, JVT. Boy, exhausting day of football. I feel like I played in these games. Just so intense play to play here. How's it going?
I'm good. You know, I'm with you. After last night, staying up all night, it was a good sports weekend, man. Good day of college basketball on Saturday, because I know you appreciate these sort of things. Good mixed martial arts night as well. Then heading into today, two relatively solid games that kept you at least tuned in until the very end. So good sports weekend, good football weekend, and looking forward to what is now going to be, it should be, a fun Super Bowl.
We'll start backwards. We'll start with the game we just watched. Sam Darnold in the Seahawks. Boy, I was not a Freudian slip because he's not leading the Vikings in the Super Bowl. But you came on last year after they played the Lions, that game for the one seed. He was awful. He was awful the next week against the Rams, and here we are just over a year later. He's in the Super Bowl with a different team, and it's on brand for the Vikings. I'll start with this, though, and it was a little bit of an anticlimactic finish. Game's 31-27 after the third quarter, 58 points scored, and nobody scored in the fourth quarter, which was weird. Did you have a problem with either thing? With McVay not going for two when they were down 5 after the Nacua catch, what ultimately ended up being the last score of the game, did you have a problem? I wouldn't imagine you would with him not going for the field goal there, but he could have down 4 and at least played for the coverage. Did you have an issue with either of those two decisions?
No, not entirely. I mean, I'll be honest with you, if I could yank the wheel a little bit, my biggest problem was how he handled that first down where it looked like he was going to challenge it at the end of that game, the Cooper Kupp first down. he calls a timeout and then pulls out his flag. You can't do that, man. No. Like, that to me is the biggest thing, because either way, you're burning a timeout there. It's either your intention to burn a timeout, or you use the challenge, you lose it, you burn a timeout, or if you win the challenge, right? I was amazed by that. And he didn't have his best moments, like you're mentioning, with maybe scoring these touchdowns and, you know, going for two. I don't think there's an egregious fault that I can find really in any of these. But I think that to me was his biggest issue. I was shocked that he handled that sequence like that, that he called the timeout and then asked a challenge, realized he couldn't. That was a terrible sequence for him. He might have won the challenge, too. That's to me is a huge mistake on his part.
And there's no clarity with this stuff from the league in terms of, like, what is the time they use this video, what do they call it, replay assist, and when they don't. Mm-hmm. I thought they might have told them, hey, we looked at it, replay assist, you're not going to win. We've confirmed the call. That's the only thing I can think of. That's fourth down. I don't think as aggressive as Seattle was on that last drive, and they were aggressive. Give them credit. They played to win the game, to quote the great Herm Edwards. I don't think they were going to go for it there. I don't think they QB sneak it, even if it's fourth inches. So maybe they told him, that possible? They told him, hey, you're not going to win this. We've confirmed it upstairs.
But the problem is he had already called the timeout at that point, you know? Like, that's the right issue, is the sequence of events. Even if they had told him afterwards, he had already called the timeout. So if I am I right in my rules, and maybe somebody can tweet us after they listen to this and tell me, but you can't then challenge it. You've already called your timeout, so you can't then challenge the play, because then the ruling is that if you lose the timeout. So it'd be like losing two timeouts. You know what I mean? Like, you can't do that after you call the timeout. It's not like NBA where you call the timeout to challenge the play. You've got to throw the flag.
You got to throw the challenge.
Yep.
It's a free roll. Like you said, you're going to use it as your timeout. Who cares? I've seen people, smart coaches actually, challenge things that they had basically no chance of winning, with the idea of, you know what, I'm just going to call a timeout. This is my way of calling a timeout. If a 1 out of 100 for some reason I win the challenge, great, but I'll just, he's not great with that stuff, and that was a mistake.
Yep. Absolutely.
No problem not going for two.
No, I don't think so. I think that you were perfectly fine. I mean, like you said, it was pretty early in the game. Not early, but you're in the third quarter. I don't know if that's the point where you're trying to go for two and trying to cut it down to a field goal type of game. I think that you're perfectly fine with it. And by the way, I mean, you'd been kind of moving the ball at that point as well. I think you're feeling relatively comfortable that you can get another crack at this instead of chasing the points there in that situation. I think if you're later in the game, you go for two, but I think you're fine in the situation there to not go for two in that instance.
I thought he probably should have. Minute left in the third quarter. If you're in the fourth quarter, it's almost like a no-brainer. I mean, it's just like, what is the difference? You're down five, you're down three. I get it. You give up a field goal, it goes from 5 to 8. But I want to get it to three, and then it's obviously a different game from there. I guess the key sequence, the first play or the first drive out of the half and the drive into the half, where you've got the ball, you've weathered the storm, and they did a good job on this broadcast. I didn't think it was a great broadcast overall, but I thought they said it well. You weathered the storm. Seattle, it was this onslaught early, and you look up, you've got the lead, you've got the ball. Next thing you know, Seattle's in the end zone, and then you fumble the punt after you get the stop. So you can afford one of those. You can't afford both of those on the road in a playoff game. I thought that's ultimately what cost them the game.
I mean, I said this all week leading up to this game, and it was somewhat hyperbolic, but I think it proved to be true. The biggest mismatch on paper in these two games in conference championship weekend was the special teams for the Seahawks versus the special teams of the Rams. The Rams special teams have been a nightmare all year long. They were floating around, I think, 24th or 25th in DVOA. I think that's kind of high considering what we know about this Rams special teams unit. And Will, remember too, this isn't the only one. I think, I can't remember where it was in the first half, but the kid going back to receive the punt also dropped it earlier in the first half. It's just that he pounced on it initially. So, like, they've had these issues on special teams all year long, whether it be with their kick unit, which led them losing and failing to cover against the Philadelphia Eagles, whether it is their punt return unit, both on, I guess you call it, defensive special teams, you know what I mean, or punt coverage unit, you know, when they gave it up to Rashid Shaheed in the second time they played this team. It has been a nightmare, and it popped up again here. I wouldn't be surprised if you see a change, I think, both at special teams coordinator and defensive coordinator here for the Rams. Their defense wasn't good. Darnold, leading up to this game, had not played well at all. And all of a sudden, he's throwing piss missiles left and right. He's picking you apart. The offense is moving at will, and your special teams blew it again. Stafford, once again, I think, leaves a game where he feels relatively good about the way that he performed. He got this offense to average 8.3 yards per play tonight, and they lost 31-27. That's unreal.
Do you think ultimately the Thursday night game where the Rams blew the lead, if that goes differently, the Rams are the one and this game is in L.A., the Rams get the rest, Seattle doesn't, you think that flips the result?
I mean, I think it maybe could, but though that extra week off doesn't change the issues that we know about this team. They don't play better on defense. Their special teams doesn't all of a sudden become fixed. Those are two things that are always going to be with them regardless. So, I mean, maybe it helped Stafford a little bit when we're talking about the finger he's been dealing with. I know it's irrelevant now, but on that last Hail Mary, you kind of saw him shaking his hand out. I don't know if he maybe dinged it up again or whatever it was, but maybe those little things change. But they're not going to all of a sudden learn how to play special teams. They're one of the worst special teams units in the NFL, and it popped up again here, and the same with their defense.
Do you think Seattle would have gone for it if they ruled Kupp short?
Yes, probably.
Yeah, I'd say they were super aggressive on that last drive. They probably just sneak and go for it. That would have been, what, on their own 40? That would have been really ballsy. I think it would have been the right move. I don't know if they would – I don't know. These coaches are getting more and more aggressive. But
I mean, McDonald's not exactly an aggressive, super aggressive coach. Like, he loves to trot his guy out there to kick these field goals. But having said that, as we're talking about, again, the Rams were averaging nearly 9 yards per play in this game. Stafford was carving them up. They were getting chunk plays. I would just trust my offense at that point and go, you know what, look, we're having a good offensive day. I can't trust my defense right now because Stafford's just in the zone and they're killing us. I think we need to go for it and just make sure that we can control the outcome here, which is with the ball in our hands. I would not have faulted them at all in that situation.
All right, let's go to the early game. Everyone is talking about Peyton, 4th and 1. Going for it. I said at the time, and you got to take into account what you think at the time, I would have gone for it. I'm usually a go for it guy. I wouldn't have thrown a fit if he kicked the field goal just because you got a good defense. Defense looks good. You know, it's a backup. It is a backup quarterback. You're home. Just take the 2-score lead. So I wouldn't have been mad if he kicked it. I wonder, and look, at 14, if he can get that game to 14-0, it's probably over. I can respect the fact that he went for the kill. I probably would have preferred a sneak. I wonder if Peyton knew the weather that was coming. If you knew the weather that was coming, you, I think, 100% kicked that field goal. What was your whole take on this situation? A lot of people playing the results on this, which annoys
me. Yes, as usual. No, look, I think you're right in two instances. First off, I think the conversation we fail to have every single time when we have these spots is, it's not the decision to go. It's the play call that drives me nuts. I hate, and I can't remember who I was watching this with, but we were watching a football game with somebody who had played football, and you're talking about watching the rollout to the right in a condensed situation. That kills me every time. And they did it with Stidham, too, in that fourth down where you try to roll out, and you're like, nope, sorry, we're cutting the field in half. It drives me nuts, the play call itself. I'm with you. Sneak it. Do whatever. Because I think people are also failing, or I think casually forgetting, I guess on purpose here, the fact that Stidham did rip it on the previous drive. Like, they were looked like they were going to go and maybe up and down the field here before the weather had really declined, but he had that 5-play 59-yard touchdown drive, which of course he had the big play downfield and then the touchdown pass. They actually had a good drive going the drive after that, but they eventually had to punt it away, and then they had that one where they were moving the ball. At that point, they're moving the football. So if you're Sean Payton in that situation, you're assuming that, all right, cool, our offense is moving, Stidham's got a good feel for this, let's go for this. And like you said, that could have been a knockout blow of 14-0 given the way this weather ultimately evolved. I don't know if Peyton knew. I know I looked up weather, and it didn't. That wasn't coming, at least that what I read. I don't think anybody expected that. And it seemed to last for just the third quarter and then kind of died down in the fourth. But either way, I didn't have a huge problem with it all. I'm with you. I think a lot of people were just playing the results. And then, and especially with the way the game played out, a lot of people were willing to look at that and say it was all his fault. When in reality, I think, again, some of the timeout sequences and what he was doing with his decision-making down the stretch were an absolute nightmare, especially in the second half where he's burning timeouts for no freaking reason whatsoever, Peyton. I thought that was abysmal.
Which ones?
I think we were – so there was a – there was, wasn't there a timeout that he called right before a punt, if I remember correctly? There was a couple of these where he's burning them for absolutely no reason whatsoever in sequences that you probably could have used them, especially when they got the ball.
He lost one on the challenge, which that was another controversial one. I didn't think he was going to win it necessarily. I thought it was 50-50, though, and I thought, look, that's a 3 or 7 point play, and I did think he was short. I can understand why he challenged it. That's why he lost the first one. I thought he used the other two on defense when the Patriots were trying to burn clock. Maybe I'm remembering that wrong, but I do believe he burned the other two on defense.
Yeah, I'll have to find out where there was, because there was one where we were watching, because I was watching with a crew of people. We were all asking the question of, why is he burning a timeout here? because you're going to need these a little bit later. So we've seen it from Peyton before. I'm not a big Sean Payton guy at times when it comes to decision making. And I think that I saw the tweet. It's a little unfair and somewhat hyperbolic, but he has gotten a lot out of that go for it. The onside kick in the Super Bowl against my Indianapolis Colts. But some of the game management stuff has been a little bit of an issue, and I think we saw it today here.
Did you think he was short on the sneak?
Yes. I was surprised by that. And it's actually, it's funny. I was just saying Peyton didn't really do a good job. It was actually a really smart thing by him to ask, it seemed like he was asking on the broadcast, pointing up, do you have the above angle when he was asking the officials? And the officials said, yes. I thought that was the most damning angle. And I'm sure somebody buzzed down to him and said, hey, if they have that angle from up top, they're going to rule this that he was short.
Yeah.
And they somehow still ruled that he got it. I thought that was weird.
Are they still playing overtime right now?
I know.
If either they don't get that conversion with May, or Lutz makes the kick, and Romo was very adamant that, hey, if whoever on New England doesn't get a hand on that ball, that's going to be a good kick. It's a 10-10 game with, 4 minutes to go? They might still be playing trying to score. That would have been that would have taken a while.
Yeah, it would have. That was, it's funny. I was thinking that, too. It's like, dude, in the middle of the game, does Roger Goodell come down to the field and just go, hey, you know what? This is where we need to change the rules. We're going to college style because this game's never going to end if we don't. And I thought that was I'm with you. And I thought maybe if we get overtime, this is going to take forever. But, dude, the Broncos got to – they made a lot of mistakes. The missed field goals, everything like that. Like, that was a problem for them. And there's a pretty big reason why they ended up losing this game, because I didn't think the Patriots were the better team. I know there was a lot of issues for both sides, but May didn't play particularly well. And this whole thing was a slap fest. But I thought the Broncos gave this thing away. I mean, you miss kicks, you turn the ball over twice, that's going to kill you.
Did you think it was awesome to have a game like that in that weather with a chance to go to the Super Bowl? Or did you think this is ridiculous? We got a backup quarterback with Denver. Nobody can get their footing. This is just – I'm trying to think of the word. It just – something about it to me – because my answer would be both. Something about it was awesome, but something about it just felt weird about that. That decided trip to the Super Bowl just – I don't know, didn't sit right with me. What was your take on the weather and just like the level of play in that game?
I mean, I think it was fine. It was whatever. I think personally, man, I think both teams kind of stink. You know, when you watch the NFC Championship game after that and you see the level of football, and yes, the weather had something to do with it, but you see the skill level on offense at the skill positions. You see the quarterbacks play. You see the level of defense. Yes, even in a game that finished 31-27, you see the level of skill on defense as well between the two teams, specifically with Seattle. I just see two teams that ultimately were at the point where I think a lot of us thought this about this thing, but I don't know, a month ago, 2 months ago, that the NFC was clearly the better conference. And I watched that game between the Broncos and the Patriots, and I was like, I didn't really care about the field or anything like that. I was just, man, one of these two teams kind of make it to the Super Bowl. They both kind of stink. And I think both of them are going to get wrecked when they meet whoever's going to come out. And especially if, because I was on Seattle here and I've kind of been pro Seattle since the start of the postseason. I think they're going to get roughed up by Seattle.
Yeah, I wrote my notes here. On one hand, this is awesome. On the other hand, this is just absurd with the weather.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. We're never happy as a society. I can point to you 1,000 tweets of people.
It. No, I love it.
You know what I mean?
Just,
complaining about, oh, man, Buffalo's going indoors. This is ridiculous. This is how football should be played. And then those same people are like, this slop, this is going to decide the game. This is ridiculous. Nobody's ever happy.
No, I absolutely loved it, but there was part of me like, man, this is just kind of like, what are we doing? But and it's amazing, too. Denver's up 7-0, like you said, moving the ball, 4th-and-1 in the red zone. To think at that point they're never going to score the rest of the game, that would have been hard to believe.
So you're
laying it with Seattle here?
I want to see. So is it 3? I know the look-ahead line was 3. Is that officially? What is it?
FanDuel's got 5.5, I believe.
Ooh, yeah, you're right. I'm looking at 4.5 right now.
4.5. 5.5 seems a tad high. I know most games don't land on 5. It's kind of a dead number. I don't know. What do you think it closes?
I mean, I'd probably say 4. I'm looking at DraftKings at 4.5 right now. I'm sure there will be some who believe that the Patriots are deserving of a little bit more. I mean, what changed? The look-ahead line was 3, and a lot of people had accepted – or 3.5, excuse me. And a lot of people had accepted that. And I think a lot of people will push back on this adjustment here and say that this deserves to be a little bit closer to New England. But I think I'll take the same tack that I did last year with Philadelphia. You ask the question, hey, of these two teams, who, if I were to ask you, hey, this is a blowout, who's the team that does it? I mean, it's obviously Seattle, I would think, is your answer. And I like Seattle here. So I think you can play some alternate lines. That's what I did with Philadelphia last year. I'll do that here too. And maybe bet it up a little bit. So, but I'll wait to see where this gets to. I'd venture a guess it closes like 4, 4.5.
How many times are we going to see the Malcolm Butler interception between now and 2 weeks from now?
20,000 times. And it's also because I didn't realize this. I was listening because I was watching at home, so I actually had the sound on for once and paying attention. Obviously, the tie now, not only Brady, but he's from the San Francisco area. So, like, there's all this non, like, there's so many narrative ties to what they're going to do here for the Super Bowl. So, but the Butler thing is going to be played 1,000 times over.
Michael Lombardi was on that Patriots staff. He was in the building. You and Stormy should have him on. You guys should book him for the Super Bowl preview.
Yes, I'm sure he will say yes. I'm sure he'll come on post haste. I mean, here's the real question. I'm going to be out there for Radio Row all week. I leave next Sunday, and I'll be there through Saturday. If Michael Lombardi's out there, will he act like he knows me? Will he recognize me? If I go to say hi to him, will he say hi to me?
Yes.
I think so, too. We'll see, though. We'll see. You never know.
Super Bowl MVP. This is...
Ooh, this is fun.
Yeah, it's fun. This is one... Like, the books have caught on to it a little bit, although this year, instead of laying 4, 4.5 with Seattle, would you take Darnold plus 125? They obviously got a better team. Like, you know, guys that could win it. It's not all dependent on Darnold, but May plus 245, Smith and Jigba plus 550, Walker 6-1, Rashid Shaheed 20-1, Stevenson 25-1. I don't know. Let me know if anybody else.
No,
Cooper
so
Cup, 90-1.
I'll interrupt you really quickly.
Go ahead.
So I did something fun and stupid for Super Bowl MVP. I've got a couple of cross-board parlays tied to Super Bowl MVP already. I put Jackson Smith and Jigba with Indiana Moneyline in the national championship game together. So JSN to win Super Bowl MVP with Indiana. That pays. I'm at 18-1 on Jackson. So I have essentially Jackson Smith and Jigba to win Super Bowl MVP now at 18-1. I also put together, I thought this was fun as well, Dodgers to win the World Series with Jackson Smith and Jigba to win Super Bowl MVP. So that pays about 55-1. So we'll see if he can get that done. But I like, obviously, I like JSN here. So I was trying to have a little bit of fun of kind of putting that together. He was brilliant again today. I mean, the one-handed catch on the sideline, the pure volume that he's going to have in these games. The Patriots, I'm sorry, but I guess I'll shout it from the rooftops. They're not equipped to cover him. They have Christian Gonzalez, and that's about it, and that's not going to be enough. He's going to get double-digit targets, and I think he's going to have a game in terms of volume similar to the receivers that we saw win these in the past, you know, Julian Edelman's and Santonio Holmes's of the world. I think that we're going to see a situation where JSN is, again, their lead dude here. So I tied a couple of cross-sport parlays to him, and I will be sweating out in Jigba to win it. And I think even at, you know, over $5, that's worth playing.
Is that Dodgers one? Is that the one that already cashed, or is that for next year?
It's for next year. It's for this coming year.
What made you do that?
Well, because, so first off, you know what? Look, it's not plus EV. I understand that. I want to have some fun. I want to be the guy.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I want to be the guy that's on the tweet that says, one better has Dodgers to win the World Series and Jackson Smith and Jigba. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, just something stupid. Like, I deserve to have one of these come in. But I also, look, I think the Dodgers, we'll talk baseball really quickly, I think the Dodgers are everything everybody expects them to be. They are the team that should win the World Series. They are very, very good. I think there is value in the current number for them to win the World Series. But do I really want to invest in the Dodgers at this point right now to win the World Series at just that small price? No. So I wanted to tie them with a couple of other things to have some fun to see if I can get something here. And, you know, I have also, like, I paired up, we're not talking NBA now, but I have a Nuggets to win the Western Conference, Dodgers to win the World Series ticket as well that I put together too. So just trying to get a little bit more out of this. I think that they're a team that looks like they're going to kick everybody's ass, and so we'll see if that comes to fruition. But that was the reason why. I just wanted to have a little fun and tie these cross-sport things together. And hey, if JSN wins Super Bowl MVP, I'm sitting on the Dodgers to win the World Series at 54-1, so I'll take it.
What any feel for this total here, 46.5?
I would lean a little under. I think that they're going to be able to. Here's the problem. If the Seahawks do what the Seahawks are capable of doing, I'll invoke the 49ers game in the divisional round, the Falcons game, the Saints game, where they're just firing on all cylinders, where their defense is pressuring, getting sacks, getting explosive turnovers, they're getting special teams plays, maybe touchdowns out of it. You could be in a scenario where maybe this game goes over just because they absolutely pour it on against a team because they're capable of doing that. But in totality, I just think maybe an under on the team total for the Patriots is a better way to handle it. I think they're just – I do. I think they're going to be able to win this game comfortably, and I think that lends itself to an under.
NBA games on Monday afternoon. I think I'm guessing this is rescheduled because of the weather here. Pacers, yes. Hawks, Monday, 1:30 in the afternoon. Hornets and Sixers, Monday afternoon. Anything on this Monday card you like?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't really looked a ton, but I'll say this. 76ers and Hornets, we'll check the injury report and whatnot, obviously, for the 76ers, but Hornets beat the Wizards the other day. They're sitting on 18 wins. Will, they're legitimately good, man. Like, they're a team that is very dangerous. I've added a couple of futures on them, plus 450 to make the play-in, 12-1 to make the playoffs. Statistically, when they have LaMelo Ball, Con Knipple, and Brandon Miller on the floor together, they are one of the best lineups in the National Basketball Association. They have a winning record. I think they are, don't quote me on this, but I think they're 18-16 when Brandon Miller plays, somewhere in that range. They're just a team that is much better than what their record indicates. I don't want to pour more salt in the wound for you because we were just talking about your Vikings, but your Lakers have a point differential that is actually worse than what the Charlotte Hornets have, and yet the Lakers are sitting there at 27-17, and the Hornets are outside of the play-in at 18-28. I think it says a little bit about the Hornets. I think it says a little bit about your Lakers as well. But either way, this is a team that is playing pretty well, and I think that they're definitely worth tailing, but the market's kind of creeping up on them. They're 3.5-point favorites tomorrow against 76ers.
GRP's Hornets. Well, that's his squad.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen this. I'll just say that the Hornets love goes back multiple seasons. So if and probably when that person starts to claim that, you know, people are stealing his stuff, we have the record.
Okay. Okay. And what, you know what's funny? I was doing the draft. I might have talked about talked to you about this. I was doing the draft coverage with Humans the day after the night of the second round, and Humans loved the Hornets draft. I love the Hornets draft. We couldn't put one, like, just one and one together and take the next logical step and bet them to win the summer league. I think they were 151.
Yeah.
I tailed your Hawks bet. That was
that
a
was
perfect
brutal
one.
Brutal beat,
one
dude.
Just, man, that was
how about that?
Beat.
We go 4-0. We don't even make the playoffs.
Awful.
Nailed it.
That was the week for me where I had Alonzo like 45 to win to win All-Star
game.
MVP,
yeah.
Like -800. Then I got a bad beat. Like lost by an inch on like 100-1 on the home run derby. Any NBA awards we should be betting right now? I know we had you on, I think, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You talked about Keontae George. I know he's had some big games. I'd imagine that moved in our favor. I did tail you
it
on
has.
That one. Anything else you'd like at the moment here?
It is. Let me double check here. At last look, Keontae George was down to about 4-1 to win most improved player of the year. And he should, again, I will reiterate, I've shouted it from the mountaintops 1,000 times on our show as well. If he is not the favorite to win it, he should be, and there's value in adding him now if you don't have anything for Keontae George. So I'm very bullish on him to win this thing at this point. Let's see. Most improved for Keontae. Yeah, he's like plus 450, tied with Jalen Johnson. So, again, I think there's value there. So there's a couple. So I added this. I haven't talked to you for a while. I think I mentioned this to you. If not, I think there's still some value here. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about this on Pod of the Futures. I added David Adelman at 66-1 to win Coach of the Year. The Nuggets are continuing to win basketball games in the non-Jokic contest. I believe they are now 9-5 or something like that without Jokic since he went down with the injury. He has done a brilliant job. He's down to 25-1 now to win this award, and I think he is going to be in consideration for this given what he has done here at this point. There's some really good candidates. I think much like NFL, you can make a really strong case that there's like four or five guys that could probably win this award. I mean, Darko Rakojević is also 1-2 for the Toronto Raptors, who's done a really good job too. But I think Adelman has a very strong case, and again, a 25-1 worth putting a little bit in on it because I have him at a much longer price. And I'll say this as well, throwing out something. Let me see if this price is still there. I have that's 12-1 now. I have 50-1 on Toronto to win the Atlantic Division. They are 12-1 to do it. I would still say that there is value in that as well. They're a half game back from Boston in the Atlantic. They're playing extremely well, and they're also kind of tepidly on the outside of some rumors that they might be buying at the trade deadline. Not anything big, but they might be improving the team. And for a team that's a half game back in a division that looks like it's pretty average, I mean, the Celtics are fine, the Knicks are fine, the Raptors, though, I think are on par with them, and then there's the 76ers. I think the Raptors have a much better shot to win this. The market's short-selling a team that's been playing some pretty good basketball.
I had them to win the division the year of the pandemic. I'm trying to think if I got paid on that. I think because they were leading, and then they came back, then they went to the bubble. I don't know. I remember having a bunch of new futures.
That next year was brutal for them because, if you remember, they were playing home games in, like, Orlando
Tampa
or something like that. Yeah, Tampa. And so they were like, yeah, it was an absolute nightmare for them for, like, two seasons.
Yeah, I had Eastern Conference futures on them, too, and that was the one where, who was it, Ananobi hit the game-winning three.
In the bubble.
And then they ended up losing in seven, and then Boston played Miami, and then Miami won.
You know, it's funny.
It's crazy to go back. If you ever see those bubble highlights of, like, on this day, how many years ago? We're going to look back. Somebody's going to do a 30 for 30 on the bubble, because that was the real – I think that was the first sporting event back, and they were doing preseason games and or not preseason games, but they had a little, like, you know, build-up games to it. Just something about those games. Just so weird to go back and look up.
It's funny. If I remember the Ananobi three, they were leading, I believe, in that game to him for an extend, and then they kind of blow it, and then he hits the three.
Yeah.
And I remember distinctly, because I think they won by one, and I had laid 1.5 with them in that game, and I got the, you know, that's why you play the money line. And I'm like, shut up. Like, this is – like they were winning the most of the game, and they blew it, and they had to come back. Like, throughout the entire game, you're not sitting there going, you know, I'm glad they played the money line when they're up by 15 in the third quarter. Like, get the hell out of here. There's so many of those stories. I have some horror stories with 1.5s, with 1.5s in the NBA that I could tell you that'll make your hair fall out.
Do you do you get depressed when these championship games end and you've got nothing but college basketball NBA for the next 6 weeks? You like it? What is this lull for you like?
Nah, man. I love college hoops. I think you and I have talked about it before. I'm a big college hoops guy. I mean, look, girl, it's funny because I talk to Stormy about this all the time. I never connect with her love for college football because I grew up watching UNLV football. But college basketball, bro, I grew up watching UNLV basketball. You know, I remember in religion class when I was going to Bishop Gorman High School and UNLV made the NCAA tournament, and I'm checking on my mom's singular phone that I begged her to let me take to school so I could get the score updates, and they're playing Georgia Tech in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I love college basketball. So absolutely tremendous. Very excited for this. I actually kind of get happy at this time of year because we can stop talking about football for just a little bit and actually start talking about some of these college basketball games. So, no, to me, this is the opposite. I actually really love this time of year.
It used to be so much bigger, too. College basketball in, like, the 90s, early 2000s, because, I mean, for obvious reasons, you know, like, the players would stay at one school for more than a year or two, sure, and there'd be some continuity, and these teams would have a little bit of an identity. But, JVT, I appreciate the time, man. Let us know where we can find you.
At me, JVT, up on social media. That's what I have on everything. I'm only on Twitter. Let's see. Should have bet more podcasts is yours. What do I have?
Yes.
Pod to the Futures. Pod to the Futures.
There you go.
And Harbet Handicappers on Thursdays and Money Moves Monday through Friday.
That'll do it. Thanks, JVT. We'll be back on Wednesday. Rate, review, subscribe. See you then.